the assassin.
The Boston Celtics are losers.
You know who play next, call me Jack Tate. Jack Tate. I have no regrets, I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. Without behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
Losers.
You know I break next, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets, walking like Satan. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan.
Oh, yeah.
Without behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. And if you can't tell, oh, it is so great when a team I hate loses. I'm so thrilled that the Boston Celtics lost. Oh, on their own home court. They were talking some shit, too, and it was great to see the Golden State Warriors shut them the fuck up. And I'm not going to lie, I'm not a Golden State Warriors fan. I'm a Lakers fan. But I'm a huge Steph Curry fan. I'm actually a fan of what the Golden State Warriors have built. And they're obviously the dynasty of this generation. So I got mad respect for the team. But anybody who beats the shit out of the Boston Celtics in the finals, I'm just happy for you because I fucking hate the Celtics. And there's nothing better than seeing a fucking team I hate lose in the fashion that they lost in, too. So let's just get right into it. So game five was Monday night, and since I did a show Monday, but that the finals hadn't started yet. So let's go ahead and break down game five, which was an absolute domination by the Golden State Warriors. It started out a little bit close, but really Golden State had the lead the majority of the way. They ended up getting the win 104-94. And in this game, you know, Steph Curry was coming off of a 43-point crazy, insane game. But he was non-existent in game five. But the rest of the team stepped that shit up. You had Andrew Wiggins, who just has had an amazing NBA finals. Give it up to Andrew Wiggins. Dude was a first round pick. He came into the league when he was drafted, and they had such high hopes for him. He hadn't really been living up to any of those expectations, and now here he is. He's an NBA champion. But game five, he really went off. He was the big dude. Klay Thompson went off, and then Jordan Poole. Those three guys just killed it. And so going into game five, Golden State's feeling themselves, especially because, like I said, Steph Curry had a bad game. And I mean, that's going to happen. When you're a great player, it doesn't matter. You're always, even if you play 10 games, chances are 9 out of those 10 games, you're going to be great. And that one game, you're going to have a bad game. It happens to every single player throughout the history of sports. And game five was not Steph Curry's game. But I mean, the Celtics weren't able to take advantage of that. And so that probably had to have fucked with them mentally. And so game six happens last night, and it was absolute Golden State Dama fucking nation, man. They ended up winning the game 103-90. At one point they had a 22 point lead. They did go on a 21-0 run. I mean, basically Boston started out the game looking like they were gonna, at least they were here to play a game. Because in game five, you really couldn't tell if the Celtics were even into the game. Nobody was really showing any heart. They weren't playing the same type of defense, and they were just turning the ball over like crazy. And so you're thinking, game six, you're at home, you gotta step this shit up. This is for everything. And you're playing one of the greatest teams of all time, by the way. So last night, you know, first quarter, it's looking like the Celtics are ready to go. But then all of a sudden, you know, I believe Golden State was down by like 10-ish points, maybe 8 points, I can't recall. But they were down. And all of a sudden, Golden State just went on a 21-0 run, and they never looked back. And I mean, there was this point in the third quarter where it looked like Boston was going to kind of get going, but just the turnovers were killing them last night. And I mean, Golden State was just playing amazing defense. Draymond Green did not have a good finals, except for last night. Dude was making plays. He was playing defense. He was knocking down threes. He was knocking down the big shots that he needed to make. So he was stepping it up. Klay had a good, solid first half, but his second half, he went ice cold. But Andrew Wiggins, man, Steph Curry, man, these two motherfuckers, Jordan Poole, these guys took over the game. I mean, Steph Curry could not be stopped last night. Every time he drove into the lane, he was getting some beautiful layups. I mean, we all know Steph Curry for the three-point shot. That's his bread and butter. But he was just driving the lane, and he was playing some amazing defense last night. And by the way, the defensive player of the year, Marcus Smart, was guarding him all night, and Steph was sunning the dude. So it was just crazy to see Boston just fall apart like this. I mean, in my personal opinion, overall, Boston did not show up in this NBA Finals. This was their worst showing in the entire postseason by far. I mean, Golden State, they just took it to him defensively. They were knocking down the shots. And even when Golden State wasn't playing that well, Boston could never get one up on them. Even in the games that Boston won, to me, it's really Golden State just fell apart and they beat themselves. Boston just did not play well at all. And especially these last two games, they played with zero heart at all. Zero heart. And It was a crazy series. Golden State ended up getting their fourth finals win in the last 8 years. MVP, finals MVP ended up being Steph Curry. He finally gets his first MVP. He has never won a finals MVP. So congratulations to him. I mean, like I said, Golden State, this really solidifies that they are the dynasty of this era. And this team, I mean, you could really argue that this team that just won is probably the worst out of all four of the championship teams they had. I mean, obviously the last two that they won with Kevin Durant, those were probably the best teams that they had. But I mean, this Golden State Warriors team, nobody really was even expecting them to be a playoff contender, let alone be the finals champion in the end. So they overcame a lot this season. They really dominated the regular season. They dominated the postseason, and then they dominated these NBA finals, and they did it with a really young team. You know, you got Klay coming off of missing 2 years with two really serious injuries. You got Steph Curry, who actually is coming off of an injury-prone year from last year. And Draymond Green, he hasn't really been the same type of player he was back a couple years ago. So there were a lot of questions coming into the season with the Warriors, and they still held their head high. They still dominated, and they are by far the best team of this generation. And you still can't count them out for next year and possibly a couple more years down the line. I mean, as long as Steph Curry is still playing great, and you got Steve Kerr as the coach. I mean, this team is a damn good team. But regardless of what happens in the future, right now, this is the team. And Steph Curry, in my personal opinion, this now makes it a legitimate conversation on who is the most dominant player of this era. I mean, everybody always wants to argue for LeBron. And hey, yeah, you can make great arguments for LeBron. But you can make a lot of good arguments for Steph Curry being the most dominating player of this era. They faced each other four times in the NBA Finals, and Steph has won three out of those four times. So that alone gives him a little edge right there. And the debate, both of their resumes are huge, and they both have had extreme impacts on the NBA, especially today's NBA. But this fourth ring for Steph and him getting this finals MVP, like I said before the finals began, Steph Curry, basically the only thing he was missing from his resume is a finals MVP, and he got that taken care of. And I mean, congratulations to the Golden State Warriors. I'm sorry about your Boston Celtics. You lost. That was fucking hilarious, by the way. Just fucking hilarious. And the NBA Finals champs, Golden State Warriors, once again, complete and utter domination. Congratulations to them. Like I said, Steph Curry, I'm a huge fan of his, always been a huge fan of his. So I'm happy to see what he's done for the game. Klay Thompson, like I said, him coming out for those two huge, major, debilitating injuries that a lot of players could not come back from. And while he is not the same player he was before then, he balled out. And he was huge in these finals. Congrats to him. Congrats to Draymond Green for, a lot of people were counting him out, thinking he's not the same type of player. And he battled and he showed out this last game for sure. And then you got Andrew Wiggins. Like I said, he was basically overlooked. And the Warriors took a chance on him. And now he's a champion. Jordan Poole. He was basically an undrafted free agent, and he's just been playing in the G League the last couple of years, and he took over this season. So you really got to give it up to this Golden State Warriors team. And I was just happy to see the Celtics lose. As a Lakers fan, you never want to see the Celtics. You don't like even seeing the Celtics in the finals, but at least when they lose, that shit's hilarious. And, like, it's just crazy because the Celtics were such a dominating team from January on, and once they got to the finals, it wasn't even injuries, because I thought the advantage that the Warriors would have been in the injury department, just because the Warriors were the healthier team. But injuries weren't a factor at all in the finals. It was just who played the best, and the Warriors played the best, and that's for damn sure. The Celtics, none of their star players really stepped it up when they needed to, besides Al Horford. Al Horford was probably the only guy who stepped it up every time he was asked to do so. And also, by the way, Celtics, like I said, I felt it was embarrassing and stupid for y'all to be wearing your little tributes to Kobe Bryant on your jerseys by wearing 24. And the power of Kobe did not compel you guys to do shit. As a matter of fact, Kobe would be very disappointed in the way you guys played, because these last two games especially, I don't know where the hell the Celtics were, but they just played an absolutely atrocious game. It was turnover central. They were just getting sunned, and it was a bad overall look for the Boston Celtics. That's a horrible way to end the season, but hilarious to me. So let's move on to baseball, and just a few highlights from the week. Starting with Monday, the Braves ended up hitting 5 home runs in one game against the Washington Nationals. And then the Philadelphia Phillies, who actually fired their manager a couple weeks ago, have all of a sudden, found their groove, and they've actually been they've been on a good winning streak right now. They ended up getting their 10th walk-off home run in 11 games on Monday night. So they're actually stepping it up, and I guess maybe they just needed a new manager or new direction with that team. Then also on Monday night, unfortunately, the second baseman for the Atlanta Braves, Ozzie Albies, was injured. He broke a bone in his foot, and he's actually on the 60-day injured list. So it's pretty much indefinite, his timetable for his return. So that's a huge blow to the Atlanta Braves, but I think they can overcome that, because he's not as important as some of the other guys on the team, but he's still a huge piece to what they have. So maybe come playoff time, that's when they'll get Albies back. And then also on Monday night, Vlad Guerrero Jr., he played in his 403rd game. And crazy statistics, if you know baseball a bit, you would know Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s father was Vladimir Guerrero Sr., who spent some time in the MLB as well. He played most notably for the Montreal Expos and the Los Angeles Angels, or actually they were the Anaheim Angels. I mean, they changed their fucking name so goddamn much that it's, like, difficult to keep up with. But he played for both of those teams. And when you compare their stats at both of their 403rd game, it is insane how similar they are. Starting with in their 403rd game, let's see, Vlad Guerrero Jr. the other night, on Monday night, in his 403rd game, had 3 hits, 3 RBIs, and a home run. His dad, in his 403rd game with the Montreal Expos, he had 2 RBIs and a home run. So they both had a home run, and Vlad Sr. just had 1 RBI less than Jr. And then when you compare their career statistics at their 403rd game, Vlad Guerrero Jr. is currently at 87 home runs with a 363 on-base percentage. At the exact same time, Vlad Guerrero Sr., in his 403rd game, he was at 87 home runs and 364 on-base percentage. So they both had 87 home runs at their 403rd game. And Sr. had a 0.1 percentage higher on-base percentage than Jr. How crazy is that? Very fucking crazy. And then on Tuesday night, St. Louis Cardinals pitcher Miles Mikolas, he lost a no-hit bid in the ninth inning on the last out. They had two outs. He's getting this no-hit, and boom. He gets a hit, and he just misses out on a no-hitter. He did get a complete game, but it was crazy, just because, you know, Miles Mikolas, he's basically been a journeyman his entire career. And so that's a great pitching game for him. And then in that same game, Paul Goldschmidt, who just continues to have an amazing season, he had two home runs in that same exact game. And then on Wednesday night, the Houston Astros had the first ever double immaculate inning. Now, if you're a baseball fan, you know what an immaculate inning is, but I will refresh the memory of those who just don't know or may know and just forgot. But an immaculate inning means you got three strikeouts on nine pitches. So basically, that means three batters came up to hit. You were able to get three strikeouts in a row on nine pitches, and basically not one hit happened. And those are very rare, and they're so rare that it's never happened where there's been a double immaculate inning. So basically, Luis Garcia in the second inning, he had an immaculate inning. And then in the seventh inning, Phil Maton had an immaculate inning. And that's the first time ever in Major League Baseball history that two players in the same game from the same team have had an immaculate inning. Then that same night, Anderson, the pitcher of the Los Angeles Dodgers, he lost a no-hitter in the ninth inning, just like the previous night when Mikolas lost his, except Anderson had, I believe, one out in the ninth inning, and that's when I believe it was Shohei Ohtani who ended up breaking up that Anderson's no-hitter. But that's like crazy good pitching this week. We had two almost no-hitters and then two immaculate innings in the same game from the same team. Then this same night, Manny Machado, one of the best players in the league since the day he hit the league, he's 29 years old, and he is the first player under the age of 30 to hit 1,500 hits and 250 home runs before he turns 30 years old. So congratulations to Manny Machado. So a shit ton has gone on in baseball this week. And then currently right now, the longest winning streak is owned by the Atlanta Braves. Hotlanta right now. They have won 14 games in a row. So, the World Series champs started the season off cold, and now it is back to Hotlanta. Watch out for the Braves. They haven't got to first place yet because they have a lot of ground to gain, and the Mets are playing really well, and they should be getting Scherzer back here pretty soon. Look out for Atlanta. Look out for Atlanta. But also on a 14-game home winning streak are the New York Yankees, the best team in baseball right now. They continue to be the best team in baseball right now. Anthony Rizzo had a huge walk-off home run last night to seal the sweep of the Tampa Bay Rays. So that's a big deal for the Yankees. Had a big week right up there with Atlanta. And then on the opposite end of things, the Chicago Cubs. They are one of the worst teams this season. They are so fucking atrocious. It's just insane. They are currently on a 10-game losing streak, and in their last two series, they have given up over 20 runs in both series. So just this last series, I don't recall who they played. I think they played the Yankees before, but I think they just finished with San Diego, I believe. Regardless, these last two series, the Chicago Cubs have not only lost, but they've given up 20 runs in both of those series. So that means they've given up 40 runs. Like, what the hell are y'all doing? But the Chicago Cubs are just absolutely atrocious this year. And that's those stats right there just go to show why they're doing so horribly this year. All right, now moving on to boxing. The Boxing Hall of Fame finally got to do some inductions this past week. They of course, nominated people told them that they were going to get inducted into the Boxing Hall of Fame. The last couple of years, they haven't been able to actually have the induction ceremonies because of COVID. So this year, they inducted the 2020 Hall of Fame class, the 2021, and then also the 2022. And also of note, in 2020, that was also the first year that they started inducting women boxers. So the notable male boxers who got inducted this this year, of course, are Floyd Mayweather Jr., one of the greatest boxers of all time, especially of the generation he was in. Floyd Mayweather, whether you really, because for me personally, I never really cared much for Floyd Mayweather's style. I get it. I understand the whole, because a lot of people don't like him running around. Me personally, I like attack mode boxers. I like knockouts, and I'm really a heavyweight fan. I love heavyweight boxing. And of course, Mayweather is not a heavyweight boxer, but I totally respect Mayweather. He's got some of the greatest technical skills you will ever see. He's one of the hardest working boxers of all time. I mean, one of the ways he trains, and he's been doing this since he was a child. This is what his father made him do when he was like 12 years old and started getting into boxing. It might have even been when he was 8 years old, but he gets a big tree trunk, and I mean a legit tree trunk, not some little like fucking Christmas tree trunk, like a legit big ass tree trunk, and he just chops wood. He just takes a fucking axe and just chops for hours on end. That's one of the reasons why he's so fit and can just, he could just go 12 rounds and it don't fucking matter. But whether you liked him or not, he was the most dominant boxer of his time. He's undefeated and one of the greatest skilled boxers you will ever see, ever. Then also Roy Jones Jr., another amazing boxer, got inducted into the Hall of Fame. DeAndre Hopkins, another great boxer. Sugar Shane Mosley, Miguel Cotto, and Juan Manuel Marquez. So those are the notable men. And then over on the female side, you got Leila Ali, obviously one of the greatest of all time, Christy Martin, Holly Holm, Ann Wolfe, and Regina Halmick. And one thing that I thought was weird, because of course when you hear that 2020 is the first year that they started inducting women into the Boxing Hall of Fame, at first I'm like, is that... That's crazy. You know what I mean? Because to me, one of the things I've always actually loved about boxing and the UFC is that women are able to participate. But unfortunately, when I actually did some research, because I really wanted to look and be like, well, that kind of sucks. They just now started inducting them. But when you look at the history of women's boxing, it actually kind of makes sense, just because really women's boxing didn't start taking off till the 90s. And that's really when Leila Ali dominated. And so it makes sense that she's getting inducted now, because she was basically the most dominant female boxer back in the 90s. But actually, it's so stupid and archaic and hilarious to kind of look into the history of women's boxing specifically, because back in the days, and it's still to this day in certain countries, females are not allowed to box because we might get hurt. Like, duh, that's what boxing is all about, stupid. But yeah, it was outlawed for the longest time. I think it was all the way up until like the 80s, at least here in America, because every country has, like I said, some countries still do not allow women to box. And it's a big deal, and it's hilarious that it's an actual fucking argument when it's like, if women want to beat the shit out of each other, they should be allowed to, just like men. And some of these bitches, like Holly Holm, is a badass motherfucker. I think her technical skills are just as amazing as Floyd Mayweather's technical skills. So, I mean, and Leila Ali, another amazing fucking boxer, not just because she's Muhammad Ali's daughter, but because she was a damn good boxer. But so basically up until like the 80s, women weren't really allowed to box. And even when they were finally, quote, allowed to box, like they still had to like wear headgear, and they just made really stupid rules for them. But like I said, like it's been outlawed still to this day in some countries because they don't want women to get hurt or whatever the fuck. So I didn't go really deep into my research because, you know, I don't really have that much time. But like from the little bit that I did, I'm like, man, it is crazy that even now, to this day, women's boxing is still difficult. They don't get a lot of the sponsors, and they don't get a lot of promotion. And I actually completely understand why Holly Holm switched over to UFC, because at least she has a future in UFC. And I know people like to debate about and make big deals about the money made in UFC. But when you compare boxing to UFC, especially for women, women actually have a really good chance at earning money on UFC. As a matter of fact, if you actually look at the top highest earners in UFC on the men and women's side, and this is historically, not currently, historically, the highest paid male UFC star was Conor McGregor, and highest paid female star was Ronda Rousey. And really, if you look at the UFC, it's basically on merit. If you're a draw, you're going to get paid, especially if you win. Of course, you're going to get paid. But if you're just a big personality like those two are, you're going to get fucking paid, because especially the pay-per-view shares, if more people are watching you on pay-per-view, the more money you're going to get. Both of them still have gone on to do a lot of great things just because of their UFC careers. And so I totally see why Holly Holm was able to take her boxing skills, take some kickboxing skills as well, and move on over to the UFC, because she at least has a future over there. She can earn a lot more money over there, and she's still doing it at 40 years old, I believe, is her age. I know she's like only a couple years older than me, and she's still doing that shit. But it's just crazy to kind of look at women's boxing and see how far it has to go. Because I was very shocked to see that 2020 is the first year that we're inducting women boxers. But then when you look at the research of the history of the sport, it's not shocking, and it still has a long way to go. But congratulations to everybody who made the Boxing Hall of Fame. That's a big deal. Those were all some great boxers that just named off. There was even more, but it's just the list was so long that I just wanted to at least highlight all of these boxers. All right, and now let's move on to the College Baseball World Series. That begins today and runs through the next 10 days. And I'm looking forward to it because now we're at the best part of it. I mean, it just now is the actual College World Series. The beginning that what we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, that's been the tournament bracket. But now we are at the College Baseball World Series. And this is where it all matters. We're in Omaha, Nebraska. And so let's get started with bracket number one. We have Texas A&M versus Oklahoma. They play today, and I have Oklahoma moving on in this game just because Oklahoma is playing great baseball right now. They seem like they can't be stopped. And Texas A&M, they're playing great baseball as well, but I just see Oklahoma moving on, especially because I really want them to move on as well. And you'll find out here in a couple seconds. Because moving on to game two of bracket one is my Texas Longhorns versus Notre Dame. Of course, I'm taking my Texas Longhorns because they're kicking some motherfucking ass. They know how to win in the College World Series, and I really, really, really want them to go up against Oklahoma. That's why I want Oklahoma to win, because I want to see me some Texas versus Oklahoma, because we need some goddamn revenge for a couple weeks ago when Oklahoma beat us in the Big 12 tournament. Then, in bracket one, since I have Oklahoma and Texas winning, that means on Sunday, those two would play against each other. And then also the two losers of those who they beat, Texas A&M and Notre Dame, they actually would play a game five against each other in this bracket. And so in that matchup between Texas A&M versus Notre Dame, I have Texas A&M moving on just because they are a good baseball team. Not that Notre Dame isn't. I mean, they just took out Tennessee, the best team in college baseball. But I just believe more in Texas A&M at that point. So then moving down to bracket two in round one, we have Stanford versus Arkansas. They are going to play tomorrow. I have Arkansas winning this one just because I actually do think Arkansas is one of the best teams in college baseball for sure. I actually had them going all the way and losing to Tennessee when I first made my initial picks. So I'm going to take Arkansas and ride with them. Then we've got Auburn versus Ole Miss. I have Ole Miss in that one. I think it's going to be a close matchup. Auburn is a very sneaky team, but I've got Ole Miss winning that matchup. So the two winners in that matchup is going to be Arkansas versus Ole Miss. And the two losers is going to be Stanford versus Auburn. And so in that matchup, I've got Stanford moving on. And so then in the second bracket of bracket one, I have Oklahoma versus Texas. And of course, I've got Texas moving on and getting their revenge. And it's very possible in my bracket I might be having Texas versus Oklahoma yet again, because it's very weird the way the College World Series works is it's kind of like a round robin thing. Even if you lose, you could still move on. So in the what I'm going to call the losers side of the bracket is going to be then Oklahoma versus Texas A&M. And in that matchup, I'm going to have Oklahoma beating out Texas A&M once again. Just because, you know, I want to see Texas versus Oklahoma for a second time. Then so at the in bracket number two, I've got Arkansas versus Ole Miss. And I'm going to ride with Arkansas all the way through. So I got Arkansas beating Ole Miss in that one. And then so that would move Ole Miss down to play Stanford. And so in Stanford versus Ole Miss, I would have Stanford win that one just because I think Stanford's the better matchup. So then that moves us over to the third round of the Men's College World Series. And that I have Texas versus Oklahoma once again. In that matchup, of course, I'm taking my Texas Longhorns because fuck you, Oklahoma. And then in bracket number two in the third round, I have a matchup of Arkansas versus Stanford. And like I said, I had Arkansas going all the way, so I might as well keep riding with Arkansas. And I've got Arkansas beating Stanford. For my national championship, it's going to be Texas versus Arkansas in a best of three series. And you know, at this point, I'm taking my motherfucking Texas Longhorns because, duh, taking my motherfucking Texas Longhorns. They're a damn good team. They're playing some damn good baseball right now. And I can't take them unless they fucking... I can't pick against them unless they fucking suck. And they don't fucking suck. They're actually pretty damn good. I've got the Texas Longhorns winning the national championship. So we'll see how that goes. We'll see where we're at come Monday. Looking forward to all that college baseball this weekend. And with that, this week's Trop 5 list, since I was talking about Vlad Guerrero Jr. and Vlad Guerrero Sr. and how similar their careers have gone, at least statistic-wise, I thought it would be a good idea to do the Trop 5 father-son MLB duos. Yeah, I just did the NBA ones a couple episodes ago, so I might as well do the MLB ones. And actually, in baseball, it was a lot more difficult to choose from because there are a lot of damn good father-son duos or even triples here. So let's go ahead and start off my Trop 5 father-son MLB duos with number 5, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Sr. And they could actually move up. Vlad Guerrero Jr., his career is only beginning. And Vlad Guerrero Sr., he had an amazing career. Sr. is most known for, like I said, playing with the Montreal Expos and the Anaheim Angels. He won the AL MVP in 2004. His career home run mark is 449. And he was a Hall of Fame inductee in 2018. Vlad Guerrero Jr. is currently playing for the Toronto Blue Jays. And last year, he led the AL with 48 home runs, 401 on base percentage, and he just absolutely dominates the league. He's been one of the best home run hitters. I mean, he almost was the MVP last year had it not been for Shohei Ohtani. And I just think he's got a bright future. I think he's definitely one of the future stars of the league, and he's going to be around for a while. So I've got Vlad Guerrero Sr. and Jr. at number 5. At number 4 on my college baseball. Number 4 on my Trop 5 father-son MLB duos, I have Felipe Alou and Moises Alou. Now, Felipe Alou, he played for the San Francisco Giants his entire career. And he also was the manager of the Giants at one point as well. During his playing career, he was a three-time All-Star, a career of 206 home runs, a 286 batting average, and he was also NL Manager of the Year in 1994. Now, his son, Moises Alou, he's most known for playing with the Florida Marlins and the Chicago Cubs. He is actually in one of the most infamous Chicago Cubs moments The Steve Bartman moment is when Steve Bartman took the ball away from him in the outfield. I mean, who knows how life could have turned out for the Cubs. They probably still would have sucked, regardless of what happened with Bartman. But he's in that play. But also, he played with the Giants for a couple years as well. He is a two-time Silver Slugger Award winner. He won a championship with the Florida Marlins in 1997, and he's a six-time All-Star. So both of those guys had stellar careers. I would say Moises' career was a little bit better than his father's, but I mean, at the same time, Felipe was a player and a manager, so both of them had amazing careers. Then at number three on my top five father-son MLB duos, I have actually not just a duo. These guys, there's three of them, starting off with Ray Boone and his son, Bob Boone, and then his son, Aaron Boone. Now, Ray Boone, he's most known for playing with the Cleveland Indians and the Detroit Tigers. He was a two-time All-Star. He won a championship in 1948 with the Indians. And at one point, he was the AL RBI leader in 1955. Then his son, Bob Boone, is most known for playing with the Phillies, and he was also a manager for a little bit of time as well. He's a four-time All-Star. He won a championship in 1980, and he's a seven-time Gold Glove Award winner. Then his son, Aaron Boone, who was mostly a journeyman throughout his career. He was most known for playing with the Cincinnati Reds and the New York Yankees, and he's actually currently the New York Yankees manager. But his claim to fame was actually in Game 7 of the 2003 ALCS versus the Boston Red Sox. Basically, they went into extra innings, and in the 11th inning, Aaron Boone hit the game-winning home run to send the Boston Red Sox back home where they belong. But I mean, out of all three of them, they all had impressive careers. And Aaron Boone's still currently a manager. I mean, all three of them actually, were they all three managers? No, just two of them, Bob and Aaron, were managers. But Ray Boone kicked it off, and all three of the Boone family, and there's even more. I think there's a couple more Boones who actually have played in baseball, but these were the three notable Boones. Then at number two on my top five father-son MLB duos, actually one of my favorite players of all time is in this duo, Ken Griffey Sr. and Jr. I loved Ken Griffey Jr., one of the most exciting players of all fucking time. Love Ken Griffey Jr. So Ken Griffey Sr., obviously between the two of them, Jr. is the best. But they are the only father-son duo to play together on the same team. They both played together with the Seattle Mariners. So Senior, he's most known for playing with the Cincinnati Reds and the New York Yankees. He actually is a three-time All-Star, and he's a two-time champion with the Cincinnati Reds. He won in 75 and 76. Now, Ken Griffey Jr., he's got a huge resume. He's known for playing with the Seattle Mariners and the Cincinnati Reds, just like his father. He's a 13-time All-Star. He won the AL MVP in 1997, 10-time Gold Glove Award winner, 7-time Silver Slugger Award winner, 4-time AL home run leader. He's a 1-time AL RBI leader, and he has a career total of 630 home runs. And real talk, when I say most exciting, like, I think he's like the Deion Sanders of baseball. Because if you watched Deion Sanders in football, you know exactly what I mean. Like, he just changed the game. He was so electric. He was so fun to watch. And nobody was like him. That's what Ken Griffey Jr. was. Ken Griffey Jr. not only was electric behind the plate, but defensively, that dude was so fucking underrated. He made some insane catches. He did some great things. I just loved Ken Griffey Jr.'s career. I was so happy that I got to see his career. But they are at number two on my father-son duo list. Number one on my top five father-son MLB duos, Bobby Bonds and Barry Bonds. Bobby Bonds, he spent the majority of his career with the San Francisco 49ers. He was a three-time All-Star, a three-time Gold Glove Award winner, and his career home run totals was 332. Now, obviously, the reason why they're at number one is mostly because of Barry Bonds. Feel how you want about Barry Bonds. I'm a Giants fan, so of course I enjoyed his career. I watched his entire career as a Giant, as a matter of fact. I don't really remember much of him as a Pirate just because I was pretty young, or I think he was even drafted in 84, and so I was born in 85. So most of his Pittsburgh Pirates career, I don't really remember. But his San Francisco Giants career, I fucking remember every minute. I saw him break the record, the home run record. I've seen him. He was such a fun player to watch. And so the reason why they're number one is mostly because of Barry's stellar fucking career here. So he first started off with the Pittsburgh Pirates, then ended his career as a San Francisco Giant. His highlights are he's a 14-time All-Star, 7-time MVP, 8-time Gold Glove Award winner, 12-time Silver Slugger winner, 3-time NL Hank Aaron Award winner, 2-time batting champion. And now let's talk about his all-time career record marks. Every one of these stats that I'm going to name off is actually currently still to this day an MLB record. Starting off with his career home runs of 762. He hit 73 home runs in one season. He had 2,558 bases on balls in one season. He's a 2-time home run leader, 2-time RBI leader. 232 bases on balls in a single season, 609 on-base percentage in a single season, and 863 slugging percentage in a single season. So Barry Bonds was absolutely one of the most dominant hitters of all time. Yes, I know we could discuss the steroids shit, but when you really look back at the steroid era, unfortunately, the majority of those dudes were doing steroids. It was completely encouraged by management, trainers, owners, and the entire league. So you can't blame the dudes doing steroids for something that was completely encouraged. I'm not saying it's cool. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying the playing grounds were actually very even because Barry Bonds wasn't the only one doing steroids at that time. But so feel how you want about him. I personally enjoyed his career. I have a Barry Bonds jersey that I've always proudly worn. Like I said, I remember when he hit the record-breaking home run. I remember it like it was yesterday. And I remember the season where he broke the home run record for single seasons, where he hit the 73 home runs in one season. I mean, really, the only thing he's missing from his career is a World Series. He, of course, went to the World Series when they lost in 2002 to the Angels, which was absolutely awful and heartbreaking. But other than that, I mean, Barry Bonds had a stellar career. And even pre-steroids, when he played with the Pirates, he was a number one overall pick. He was great when he played for Arizona. And he just, before steroids, his statistics were great. Not saying the steroids didn't help, but they also helped everybody else in the league at that same exact time. So, like I said, feel how you want about Barry Bonds. I fucking loved Barry Bonds. I enjoyed his career. And Bobby Bonds and Barry Bonds are number one on my top five father-son MLB duos of all time. So, let's enjoy the weekend of sports. We got a shit ton of baseball coming at you with the pros and the College Baseball World Series. And I will talk to you all on Monday.